In colonial times, only wealthy women had the time to make quilts. But as the settlers moved west, quilting became not just an art and a luxury, but a necessity. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Since the early days of settlement, Iowa women have demonstrated their skill, expressed their creativity, and kept their families warm through making quilts. Today, we'll talk about the history of quilting with Jennifer Perkins, the president of the Iowa Quilters Guild, and Marilyn Wooden, curator of the Kelowna Quilt and Textile Museum. Later, we'll meet Alyssa Dodge, a young woman keeping the art of quilting alive, and we'll talk about new quilting techniques. Join our conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. Making a quilt takes time, patience, and making a beautiful quilt takes real skill. Today, we'll explore the history of quilting, and later in the hour, we'll talk about modern quilting. We'll find out who's keeping this art alive, and we'll even talk about new quilting techniques. With me today to start the hour is Marilyn Wooden. She is curator of the Kelowna Quilt and Textile Museum. Kelowna, of course, the quilt capital of Iowa. Hello, Marilyn.
Hi there.
Thank you so much for being here today. And also, Jennifer Perkins is on the line with me. She is the outgoing president of the Iowa Quilters Guild, and she lives in Harlan, Iowa. Hello, Jennifer.
Hello.
Hi, Jennifer.
Hi, Marilyn.
Thank you so much for being here today. And as I mentioned, we're going to focus on history right now. And I think a lot of us have a fairly romantic idea of the pioneer women sitting around and having quilting bees and working on quilts together. Marilyn, what kind of role did quilts play in the settlers' lives in Iowa?
Well, they kept their families warm, which was a really important thing. And, of course, at that time, they weren't recognized as art. They were recognized as useful things. And, the quilts have been around Iowa for a very long time. In fact, I would say since they were developed in since the state developed.
Well, and I've read that in colonial times on the eastern seaboard, really only wealthy women made quilts because they were the ones who had the time to make quilts. Quilting was a luxury for them, but here in Iowa, it was really a necessity, wasn't it?
It absolutely was. And we who do a lot of historical quilts in Kelowna at the museum, we really recognize that, and we recognize the early quilters. And that's something that's very important. And, of course, a lot of families don't have the documentation that they need for their quilts, and their quilts are very special to them, so they don't feel that's necessary. And I'll bet you anything that Jennifer Perkins is going to say documented quilt. Right, Jennifer?
Well, it really does help. And I think it's important to note, too, that, quilting was an art for these women, and maybe they had very little else in their life that was of beauty, and they could have just slapped some fabric together haphazard and made a warm cover for their family, but they took the time to cut these fabrics into little pieces and piece them together in a pattern that was lovely, and it was good for the soul as well as warm for the family.
Well, and as I mentioned, we have those romantic ideas of women and quilting bees, but was quilting mainly a solitary endeavor for early women in Iowa, Jennifer?
It depended on where they lived, I think. If you were out in the boondocks by yourself, it was solitary, but if it was a good time to get together with other women and visit over the quilting frame when you had a quilt done and ready to quilt and could invite all the neighbors in to help you quilt it. And so it became a social event, too, and they had dances around it and so forth, too. So they made a party out of it.
What were you going to add,
Marilyn? They really did. But one of the things that you said, Jennifer, you said they actually were art, but they did not intend that to be art. They intended most of their quilts I have always thought of as measures of love, and they gave that to their families through their quilts. I do know that in the community in which I live, which is an Amish community, that the Amish women did appreciate the quilting around the frame rather than being a lonely quilter. They do a lot of it by themselves now, but at that period of time, in the early time of, well, Iowa and the nation, they found that a social event. There is a difference, of course. We are Midwestern Amish, and there's quite a difference from that and the Eastern Amish. That's what I think.
Well, and let's talk a little bit. I mentioned Quilting Bees, but I guess not everybody grew up reading Little House on the Prairie and being steeped in that kind of history. The top of the quilt is sewn together, but that's not the part that is actually done at a quilting bee or would have been done at a quilting bee. Jennifer, can you explain for people who might not be familiar with it the process of putting a quilt together?
Well, a quilt is three layers, the top, which is either pieced or appliqued, and then there's the batting in the middle, and then the bottom layer is the backing, and the backing can either be a solid piece of fabric or it can be pieced of smaller pieces of fabric. And then the quilting ties those three layers together with a quilting stitch, and actually it brings the top alive, and it gives a real liveliness to the top with the depression where the stitches go in and out.
And those kind of stitches, the actual quilting, I mean, that's incredibly time-consuming if you do it by hand, and it was a very specialized skill.
I think it was.
Yeah.
To you, Jennifer?
Yes, uh-huh.
Absolutely.
But, you know, the kids were involved. My dad says he remembers sitting underneath the quilting frame and threading needles for the ladies, so when he was small. So they brought the kids into it also.
I like for people to think about a quilt and the putting together of it as kind of like a sandwich. So you've got three layers and a binding because they always bound that together. And I've always thought that that was kind of a neat way of thinking about it.
Sure.
It isn't original, but I thought it was a neat.
Let's talk about quilting patterns because Marilyn, you brought a copy of Pieces of Time, a quilt and textile history magazine that you put together. And this is along with the Iowa-Illinois Quilt Study Group. And looking through these pictures of these old quilts, just such incredible, beautiful, intricate patterns. Were there patterns that were shared among women? How did these patterns travel?
Yes, they were shared. And also, the quilting at that time was done very much more closely than the quilts perhaps of today, although they're excellent, excellent quilters today. But part of the reason for that is that the cotton and the batting and things, they stitched it together to hold them together. Then along came polyester. Hello, Jennifer. And when polyester came in, they found that that needle slipped through it very easily. They've gone through fabric through the centuries, and I think it's very important to realize that stitches per inch determined how good a quilter was in that day, and you would see 12 to 13 stitches per inch.
Wow.
For the normal. And now you see, probably 8 or 9. So there's quite a difference there. And I will let Jennifer do something on that one.
Oh, well, the batting was pretty thin, so it was easier to make a really, really small stitch with the old batting. But those quilts that were closely quilted now, some of the fabrics may be worn away, but the quilts are really in pretty good condition because of all that heavy quilting has really made them very, very strong. And even though some of the fabric may have had, one of the dyes has made it rot or something like that, the whole quilt still looks pretty good because of the heavy quilting.
I think we have this also an idea of reusing fabrics that had been worn out. Was that common? Did women use fabrics that were part of clothes, or were fabrics specifically bought for quilts?
Both.
Marilyn?
Both.
Both?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I agree. You know, in the East, where they had easy accessibility to fabrics, they would buy fabrics for their quilts. And, you know, in the early 1800s, they would buy fabrics and then do a technique they called broderie purse, where they cut like a flower design out and then applicate it onto a big white sheet. And that made the fabric go farther, but still it was very expensive, and the woodblock process to print that fabric was very, very expensive. So after the 1830s, they started doing more fabric production in this country, and the fabric became cheaper, and then it became more something that women could afford the fabric a little bit easier.
Well, and I think that's very important on what they could afford and also what was imported. Because I think, if I'm not wrong, that cotton was first imported from India. We didn't have that in this country. And as she said, and the textile mills started, when was that, Jennifer?
Around the 1830s.
That's what I thought.
Ballpark figure. Mm-hmm. When the textile mills really got going in this country. For a long time, England kept the United States from having the ability to print or to produce textiles. They wouldn't let anybody into our country who knew how to do that, basically,
right.
And kept that to themselves so they could corner the market. But finally, some people came over with the knowledge and got things started here.
I've always had the feeling, though, that American women were the innovators of doing different things with their quilts. Their patterns became really abstract, and they did, well, not always, but, you know, what they did was very innovating to the quilt world.
Mm-hmm.
You agree with that?
Yeah, and I think we probably can be credited with starting the block-style quilt
right.
in this country. That up to then, they had, you know, things in triangles and a medallion
and
with
whole cloth.
Rows of triangles around and squares, but we actually started the block, like
right.
the big star block or whatever, you know, and a quilt made out of different, you know, 12 blocks or whatever.
Well, we need to take a break. We're going to talk more about quilting history in a moment. We'll talk about quilting patterns, also embroidery on quilts. And we'd like to hear from you as well. Are you a quilter? Is this something you learned from your mother or your grandmother? Is this something that's been important in your family? And why? Why do quilts matter to you? Give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me is Marilyn Wooden. She is curator of the Kelowna Quilt and Textile Museum, and Jennifer Perkins, outgoing president of the Iowa Quilters Guild. We'll talk more in a moment. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Today we're talking about quilts and quilting, this artwork that is continuing to live as part of Iowa culture today, although some people think of it as a dying art. We're talking today about quilting history, and just in a couple of minutes we'll meet Alyssa Dodge. She's a young woman who quilts herself. We'll talk about the people who are keeping this art alive, and we'll also talk about the quilting community of today as well. You're welcome to join our conversation at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me is Marilyn Wooden. She is curator of the Kelowna Quilt and Textile Museum, and Jennifer Perkins, outgoing president of the Iowa Quilters Guild. She lives in Harlan, Iowa. And Marilyn, let me ask you, what can we learn by looking at historic quilts?
One of the things I've always thought about as quilts, and I am talking from not being a quilter, but rather a collector, is the knowledge that the quilts help us see that women of long ago, that made a statement that they were here. and that they cared and that they loved their families very much. And basically, that's what historical quilts were made for, is the love of quilting and providing warmth. And I will let you talk to the other two, but I probably got into it differently than a quilter like Jennifer Perkins. And I have friends, all good friends, made through quilting.
And how did you get into it?
Well, I had a little shop. It was rather a hole-in-the-wall shop. And one day, an Amish woman brought me in some quilts. There were two of them, I believe, or three. And I had students from the University of Iowa that would come into my shop. And there were a couple of them by the name of Eve Granick, who has written a great book on Amish quilts. And they kind of led me into that. I could see the art. I could see the beauty in these. And plus, I could feel the old cotton. And it was soft and gentle. And at that time, I had a few new quilts on hand, but they didn't give me the heart pull that the old quilts did. And so consequently, I started buying quilts, and my shop started growing, and gradually we became the largest retailer of quilts in Iowa. And we promoted quilts throughout 30 years, and still are, by our sidewalks in Kelowna, which have blocks in them, and via the Kelowna Quilt and Texture Museum. And I think when people come into that museum, they can see, I hope, the difference between our two galleries. We have one that's an English gallery, and we have one that's an Amish gallery. And anyone who doesn't know, anyone who calls, the Amish call the English if they're not Amish. So it's kind of an interesting fact for the folks from away.
Jennifer, how did you get involved in quilting?
I had always sewed, and I had actually, my hometown newspaper had a quilt column in it, and I'd always just kind of clip those out and save them. But Virginia Robertson bought our old church when we built a new church in my hometown of Overbrook, Kansas, and my mom went to work there, and my sister-in-law, and Virginia started a quilt class, one of the very first block of the month classes to be around in 1984, and I was living in Iowa, and they talked me into taking that class by mail. So every month I would have to call them and find out what they learned in class, and so I tried to figure it out on my own, and I eventually started taking classes here too and learned how to quilt, and I just fell in love with it.
Why do you think it's important for us to understand historic quilts, and why do you quilt today?
I don't know. The historic quilts are just so endlessly fascinating, and to think that the women could create these beautiful, beautiful quilts without all of our modern tools and rotary cutters and rulers and things, and it's just endlessly fascinating to me. And, you know, I quilt. Keeps me off the psychiatrist couch, I think. It just keeps me sane. I love it. It's good for my soul.
We have a couple of callers on the line, and Margie's on the line at 866-780-9100 from Waterloo. Hello, Margie.
Hi.
Hi. What would you like to talk about?
Well, I have a quilt top that was given to me that my great-grandmother stitched together by hand in Texas with scraps of material that were from clothing that my grandmother made with for my mother and aunt. It's been sitting in a box for I don't even want to say how long, and I'm just wondering what I can do to have it quilted. How should I go about doing it? I'm probably not going to do it myself.
Probably have a different way of looking at that, Jennifer, than you do. But you'll always have it as an old top, newly quilted. As far as the historical, but that's not to say you can't keep it and love it as a top and it be historical. Now, there are people who can't live with things like that. They want things finished and perfect, and that's Jennifer's thing.
Well, I'm a quilt appraiser, and I can see it from a whole bunch of different aspects. But one of the main things is the fabric strong enough to be quilted? Because once you start perforating it with all these little quilting stitches, sometimes it can make fabric fall apart. If it's, I don't know exactly how old that yours is. Is it in the 1930s pastels, or is it older than that, do you think?
I would say probably the 30s, and it's fairly bright.
Okay, so it's probably, and I'd have to look at it, or you'd have to have somebody who knew what they were doing look at it to see if it's strong enough to be quilted. And 30s fabric usually is. Older than that, it's kind of dicey, frankly, to finish a quilt. But I'd certainly use, if you are going to finish it, use a cotton batting and cotton fabric for the back and have it hand quilted.
And be sure to put their name on it.
Yes, and then, make a label with all the information you know about it, right? Just everything down on that label. Well, label it even if you leave it as a top.
Yes, very important. I agree with that.
Future generations are a lot less likely to use them for dog blankets if they're labeled. They'll value them a lot more if they know, oh, this is my great-great-great-grandmother or whatever that made this, So.
Well, another thing, Jennifer, not only the stitches can hurt that, but just putting it on a frame and stretching it. I've seen fabric split just by that.
Mm-hmm.
So it has to be durable fabric.
Yeah.
And what I would like to ask is, do you have green in your quilt top?
Margie, is there green in the quilt top?
I'm trying to remember. Yes, I believe there is.
Okay. Whenever I come to a certain kind of green, I always think, that's a 30s green. So I just ask that every time. No.
You're a detective, aren't you, Marilyn?
Right.
Well, Margie, thank you so much for your call. And I have inherited a double wedding band quilt from my family, but I have no idea who made it. And it's such a beautiful quilt, and I love it, and I'll always keep it. But if I only knew, I only knew. And now there's no way to find out.
And I think, storing our antique quilts is important. The whole acid-free thing, you hear about that all the time. You don't necessarily need to get acid-free tissues and boxes for your quilts, but you can use just cotton sheets and pillowcases to store quilts. It's important not to put them in cedar chests because that cedar oil can make brown spots on your quilts, and it's important not to expose your quilts to bare wood because oil can seep out of bare wood. But, to store them, you can, put them over a quilt rack or... if you're like putting it over the top of a door of a fancy chest or something like that you have in your house, be sure to cover the bare wood that would be on the top of that door so it doesn't come in contact with your quilt and make little brown spots on it.
Right.
And don't store it in plastic.
I believe that. Everything Jennifer said is really true.
All right. I'm talking with Jennifer Perkins. She is outgoing president of the Iowa Quilters Guild. She lives in Harlan, Iowa. Marilyn Wooden is also here with us. She's curator of the Kelowna Quilt and Textile Museum. And now I want to introduce Alyssa Dodge, who lives in Des Moines. She's a designer, and she makes quilts, jewelry, and other handmade items. Her business is called Four Square Studios. And Alyssa, how did you get involved in quilting?
Well, quilting and creating have always been a really big part of my life. My Grandma Dorothy was very involved with the quilt guild at her church, and my Grandma Hattie sold quilts for the county fair. And my mom has always been a creator. She's always quilted, made costumes for us, always encouraged us to make our own things.
Well, and you make a lot of beautiful things, but why do you think quilts in particular speak to you?
Well, fabric is fantastic. All the different colors that are available now are just amazing. I really enjoy using vintage sheets and other found fabrics as well. Once I had access to a long-arm quilting machine, that really changed things for me. It gave me a chance to give it a professional, finished, polished look, and you know, very, very professional.
Right. And it really cut down on the time it took, I'm sure.
Oh,
too.
I could never hand quilt an entire quilt.
Well, for people who don't know what a long arm quilting machine is, can you describe it for me?
Yes. The one that I use is on a 14-foot table. It allows you to stretch the fabric and roll it as you go, and you have about 20 inches by 14 foot to work your machine in. And the long arm has, I think, between an 18 and 22-inch throat. So you can do some really neat patterns. The one I use doesn't have any kind of stitch regulator or fancy digital stuff to it, but it's wonderful.
And when you make a quilt, do you use a pattern? Do you start with a pattern?
I usually do start with a pattern. I am a designer by trade, so I spend a lot of time making my own patterns. I could lay them out on the computer, and I do sometimes, but most of the time I like to just hand sketch them out on some grid paper and go with it.
How long does it take you? Once you've made the pattern, how long does it take you to actually cut out the fabric?
Oh, cutting the fabric? It depends on how many pieces there are, honestly. I'd say a quilt from start to finish takes anywhere between 40 to 80 hours.
That sounds like a long time, although compared to what women in the past had to do, I'm sure it's
really very
no time
speedy.
At all. And you seem to be incredibly prolific. How many quilts do you make?
I started quilting my first quilt in 2005, and it took me about 2 years to find the time and space to finish it. Since then, I've completed about 25 quilts.
That's incredible. And what do you do with your quilts?
Well, as every quilter likes to do, I've given them to all of my family. I sell a couple. I've done some long arm quilting on other people's tops. And, you know, right now, just keep making them.
What moves you to make a quilt? Like, where does the inspiration for a specific quilt come from?
Usually from fabrics. I've started just collecting fabric and everywhere I find it. And then usually I find one pattern or one style of fabric that really speaks to me. And then I start compiling fabrics that coordinate with it. And then I'm ready to run with it.
Now, of course, there have always been quilts of different sizes. I've noticed in the past years that smaller quilts for display on the wall seem to have become very popular among modern quilters. What size quilts do you make?
I like big. Big. I think that part of it for me is that I like them to be used. I want people to snuggle with them. I want them on their couch. I want them on their beds. So for me, it's more of a useful thing than just something to display.
So it's a work of art, but also something that you want to be part of the household.
Exactly.
And of course, that's what women of the past did.
Yes.
And Alyssa, when people your age look at you and say, Alyssa, why are you making a quilt? What do you say?
Well, you get kind of people assume that it's an older lady's craft, but it seems like there's more and more and more younger people that are taking it up. I have three friends that are under 30 that have recently started quilting and really, really enjoy it. So, but then again, everybody that I know knows that I'm extremely creative and they usually don't question my...
In your own family, you had quilt mentors. Have you reached out to other women to help you with ideas and techniques?
Oh, definitely. Four of us get together, two of my friends and my mom, every other month, and we have a quilting day where we bring our quilts to Long Arm and we spend the day having soup and enjoying each other and working through different difficulties we're having or ideas.
And of course, I keep talking about women because historically quilts have been made by women, but it is 2012. Anybody can make a quilt. Do you have any male friends who quilt?
I don't, but I should.
I do. I have quite a few.
Yeah,
oh, great,
I know some too.
So, well, and Jennifer, maybe you can chime in. Do you think that there's a barrier to entry for men who might be interested in quilting?
Not really anymore. I think the time when women were shocked if a man walked into a quilt shop are over. And, you know, both straight and gay, I've seen them all in the quilt world. So there's a lot of men making very important quilts in the, you know, in the national scene, too.
Well, and Alyssa, we're posting a link to your Facebook page where you display all of your quilts. And so people can see some of the work that you've done. Do you have a dream quilt that you want to make? Is there a pattern out there that you haven't been quite brave enough to try yet?
Not that comes to mind. I think that I'm just always anxious to start the next one. And I never start one usually until I have the last one finished. So it keeps me motivated to keep creating.
And Jennifer, what's the quilt pattern that you've made that you're most proud of?
I replicated an 1830s quilt, and it got published in Quilters Newsletter magazine as a pattern and won me Best of Show, won me a Bernina at, at the Omaha Quilt Show, and has done very well, you know, in competing around the country. So that's my favorite one. It's a feathered star, and that it has feathered triangles around, and it's a medallion quilt.
Oh, wonderful. Well, we're going to bring some callers into the conversation in just a moment, and another guest, Bonnie Browning, a quilting expert and historian from Paducah, Kentucky, is going to join us in a moment. With me right now is Jennifer Perkins. She's outgoing president of the Iowa Quilters Guild. She lives in Harlan, Iowa. Marilyn Wooden is here. She's curator of the Kelowna Quilt and Textile Museum. And Alyssa Dodge, who is a designer who lives in Des Moines. Her business is called Four Square Studios, and you can see some of her designs on our Facebook page, Iowa Public Radio. You're welcome to join our conversation as well. Are you a quilter? Why is it important to you? What do the quilts in your life mean? Give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Today we're talking about quilting, and we're going to, although our experts on the past of quilting are still with us, we're going to focus now on the present day of quilting and the future of quilting as well. With me is Marilyn Wooden. She's curator of the Kelowna Quilt and Textile Museum. Jennifer Perkins, outgoing president of the Iowa Quilters Guild. She lives in Harlan, Iowa. Alyssa Dodge lives in Des Moines. She's a designer, and she makes quilts and other things. Her business is called Four Square Studios. And we want to welcome to the conversation now someone else. Bonnie Browning is a quilting expert and historian from Paducah, Kentucky. She'll be in Des Moines because the American Quilting Society show is coming to Des Moines October 3rd through the 6th. Quilters from all over the place will get together to take seminars, share ideas, and of course, drool over high-end quilting implements as well. And she'll be giving one of the seminars she'll be one of the seminar leaders at the Des Moines event. Hello, Bonnie.
Good morning.
Thank you for being here. And can you tell me a little bit about the quilting community of today, nationwide, because I know you travel all over the country?
Well, I do, and the latest survey showed that there were about 20 million quilters in this country. 20 million. You know, that's a lot of ladies quilting in quilt guilds, quilting in church basements, and quilting all by themselves.
And when you travel around and you give these seminars, who's coming to learn about quilting?
Do you know, we have all ages, and we actually have both men and women coming to learn how to quilt. But they start from children. I love to do children's classes. And, in fact, I started the quilt camp for kids at the National Quilt Museum probably 15 or 20 years, almost 20 years ago. And, you know, that's the time to get them interested. We've lost so much of the sewing and the home economics in our school system that events like that are just really helpful to make sure that we keep a longevity of this quilting tradition in our country.
Why do you think it's important?
Well, first of all, it is an art form. And one of the things that AQS always tries to do is to recognize that artistry of the quilter. And so it's a way, you know, like painters use paint, we use fabric to make our quilts. Sometimes they're very traditional. Sometimes they're very avant-garde. And you know what? Today's quilter tries to push the envelope and see, what can I use in this quilt that will just add something new and different to it?
And you are helping people learn new skills. Are people still innovating in the quilting world?
Oh, they most certainly are. I think probably many of today's quilters that are reaching out are adding paint, and sometimes they're quilting a whole quilt and then going back and putting paints or dyes on top of that. I have to tell you, I haven't been brave enough to do that. After you quilt it all, I'm always afraid I'll mess it up. But they certainly are. They're combining multiple kinds of fabric. You know, traditionally we think using cotton fabric, but they're mixing all kinds of fancy fabrics and corduroys and decorator fabric, which would be a little heavier than our traditional cottons. So they're using everything in today's quilts.
Well, Marilyn, looking through some of the pictures that are published in the latest issue of Pieces of Time, a quilt and textile history magazine that you brought with, there's so many pictures in here of quilts with embroidery on them. It almost sounds like what Bonnie's talking about is the modern twist on embroidering your quilt.
It probably is the modern. Hi, Bonnie.
Hi, I'm Marilyn.
By the way, you should tell people that you used to live in Iowa.
Yes, I am an Iowa girl. I was born and raised in Muscatine.
Yeah, there you
wonderful.
Go. But they do embroidery a lot of different ways now, not only by hand, but by machine. And I'd like to comment that I didn't mean when I said I think of historical quilts more than I do art quilts. Quilts are just a very important thing to the individual's life. And I recognize that there are artists like your guest who enjoy putting things like that quickly together and designing all of the time. I think that's why the machines came into it. And I remember the time, Bonnie, when Paducah had their show and one of the machine quilts won Best of Show.
Yes, that was 1989.
Okay. Oh, gosh. And I heard from some of the quilters that were at that time and had gone to Paducah that they did not understand why you even allowed something like that to be mandered.
Oh, yes. And, you know, it set the hand quilters on their ear, really,
yeah,
because it was like, you know, it isn't a quilt unless it's hand quilted. Well, that changed the stage, didn't
that
it?
That did. That absolutely did. And some of the machine quilting, you can barely tell that it's not hand quilted anyway. It's just beautifully done.
Right. Well, and as Alyssa was saying a few minutes ago, she feels like she could never hand quilt a quilt. So, Alyssa, if machine quilted quilts weren't considered to be quilts today, you probably wouldn't be doing this at all, right?
Well, I think I'd still do it. I don't know if other people would appreciate it as much, but I just don't have the time to spend hand quilting. So even if I could never enter into a show or anything like that, I'd still be making quilts.
And Bonnie, I want to mention, we've been talking about so many people who are excited about quilts and traveling around and going to these shows, and obviously this is a very vibrant world, but you all do seem to know each other. So.
Well, yes, you know what? It is a tight-knit community, and I'm sure there are a lot more people who know me, but I know lots and lots of quilters, not only in this country, but I've traveled to Japan and Bali and Turkey and Canada and Switzerland, and have been to Japan 3 times to go over there and judge and work on a show over there. And so it isn't just the U.S. It is truly a worldwide art community now.
Since you mentioned Japan, that movement after the earthquake and the tsunami, everyone, all the quilters, and it was all over the world that PL went out. And I know we sent from the Quilt and Texture Museum, we sent 400 quilts. So, and we sent them with Canada, who did 6,000 quilts.
Wow. Yeah.
And so, you know, it was just a real heartfelt love of the quilters to make warmth for those people.
Well, and I think the same thing happened after Katrina.
Yes.
In this country, where I had calls here of people wanting to know, do you have someone that you know that needs a sewing machine, that they lost their sewing machine? And so you're right, we are a wonderful community to be a part of.
We have a lot of people on the phone who want to talk about quilts, so let's get to the phones. April's on the line from Comanche. Hello, April.
Hi there. Thank you for taking my call. And I'm very excited. I'm going to be making my very first quilt.
Well, that is very exciting. What made you decide that now was the time for you to do that?
I have a 30-year-old niece who's very involved in quilting. And I've sewn my whole life. And I want to do something special for my husband for Christmas.
Okay. And so have you chosen a pattern already?
Very simple pattern. I'm going to use a retro cowboy fabric and fine whale corduroy.
Okay.
And I guess the rest of my story is my husband's in a dementia care center, so it's going to be a very special gift filled with love and meaning.
Oh, that's wonderful, April.
Well, yes, and you know what? Isn't it wonderful that you're able to do that? And you know what? Everybody starts out with a simple pattern. And
yeah.
So I know that you're just going to love putting this quilt together, and he's going to love it when it's all made.
I think so, and it's a way of caring for him and something I'll have once he's gone.
Absolutely.
That's true.
April,
okay.
Thank you so much for sharing
thank
your story
you so
today.
Much. Bye-bye.
Bye. And everyone must remember the first quilt they made. Jennifer, what was your first quilt?
Well, it was this calendar quilt from Virginia Robinson's class, and it was each block had something to do with the month. And so that was my first one. And, you know, I think gift giving is one of the big entries into the quilt world. You know, new mothers or grandmothers will make a baby quilt and get involved in quilting, or a wedding quilt. Giving the quilts away, it seems to be very important to quilters and making them as gifts.
Well, and that's we were talking about that earlier. It always was a way for women to take care of their families and show their love. And it's the same today for men and women who make quilts.
One of the pieces that I made early on was a little cushion to go on a little bench, and I hand quilted it. And I have to tell you, it was just like everybody else's first project in that those stitches I took for the quilting stitches were toe catchers. They were big stitches, but, you know, I still have that first piece that I ever stitched.
That's wonderful. And let's go back to the phones. Rose is on the line from Muscatine. Hello, Rose.
Oh, hello. I'm so excited. Marilyn and Bonnie have been my heroes for forever. I've been quilting for 30 years at least, and I about 10 years ago made the leap from hand quilting, believe it or not, to machine quilting, and I am scared to death.
And so are you doing machine quilting now?
I am. What I'm trying to do is I've done free motion quilting on my little Husqvarna and my Singer. You know, just with a little walker, and that's worked out beautifully for me. But I decided that I'd get one of these big frames and put my Husqvarna on it and see if I couldn't. Oh, I was so disappointed. I was so upset because I don't have a stitch regulator.
Well, and you know, I think there's a learning curve, whether you do it with your home domestic machine or whether you do it with one of the frames like you have. And so basically what you've done is you've put your machine in a frame, so now you move the machine instead of the fabric.
Yeah.
There's a learning curve. It's kind of a backwards learning curve compared to moving the fabric, isn't it?
Yes, it's just, I'm scared to death of it.
Well, you know, it's just like playing the piano. You have to practice, practice, practice.
Yes, keep practicing for sure.
Yeah, tell me about it. I'm so much more comfortable hand quilting, and I'm an insomniac, so I get up and I quilt, and I feel so much better about everything.
They're healing.
Yeah.
Well, are you going to come see us at the show in Des Moines?
Oh, I am going to try. Yes, I'm so excited to hear about that you guys are going to be there.
Hey, Bonnie.
Marilyn is from Muscatine, right?
Bonnie.
Is it Marilyn?
No,
Marilyn's
really.
From Kelowna.
No, I'm from Kelowna.
Kelowna. Who's from Muscatine?
Bonnie. Somebody. I'm Bonnie is from Muscatine.
Bonnie's from Muscatine.
I grew up there.
Yes. Yeah. And I'm from Muscatine, so, you know, everybody in Muscatine says hi.
Well, I was a Kirkland girl when I lived in Muscatine, and, of course, I married Wayne Browning, who also grew up there, and his family still lives there as well.
Oh, well, Rose, thank you so much for calling, and good luck, and I hope you find the same comfort in your new kind of quilting as you have in the other. Greta's on the line now from Coralville. Hello, Greta.
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you?
I'm doing great, thanks.
And you design fabric for quilts?
I do, yep. Actually, I live in Coralville, and I'm an artist, and I just recently signed up with a fabric company in New York, Marcus, who's a pretty well-known quilting company, and I'm doing some work for their modern quilting fabrics. So
wow,
really
that's
exciting.
Great. That's great.
Congratulations.
Good
what makes a fabric, when you're designing fabric, what makes it specific to being a quilting fabric?
Well, I think with it has a lot to do with sort of coordinating patterns and whatnot. When I first started doing it, I didn't really know much about that aspect of it, and I just actually started sewing about a year ago. So I was sort of designing designs just kind of by themselves. And then for the quilting lines, you have to create designs that can go together and can be pieced together, whether it's sort of smaller cuts or larger cuts. And these are more for modern quilting, I think mostly because they have sort of larger patterns, kind of conversational designs and things like that. So they're not exactly perfect for cutting up into tiny squares.
Well, that's fascinating. And best of luck, Greta. Marilyn,
thanks so much.
Marilyn, you want to say something about that?
Yeah. First of all, Bonnie, we're bringing a 29-passenger bus to AQS.
Okay. And you know what? I hope you all are going to come early on Wednesday because, you know, the Barnum & Bailey Circus is going to be in town while we're there. And the big ringmaster clown, their ringmaster clown extraordinaire, is going to be part of our flash mob as we open the show on Wednesday morning.
Oh, fun. But anyway, just to go back to what I first said when I said I wasn't a quilter, I tried it, and I want you to know that I really did. And not only that, Bonnie, do you know what? I painted a quilt top for my grandson when he was born 32 years ago.
What's new is not always new, is it?
But at any rate, I tried quilting, and it was disastrous because I couldn't sit still that long. And so that's one of the reasons that I guess I enjoy my collection and the museum. I can take care of other people's things, and I do recognize them as artwork. I sold them all over the world for art, so I do recognize that too. But historically, women made them for warmth.
Well, Marilyn, thank you so much for being here today and for being a part of this conversation. Marilyn Wooden is the curator of the Kelowna Quilt and Textile Museum, and it's the Kelowna Fall Festival this weekend, right? So
right.
People have an opportunity to come and visit the museum and see your collection. Jennifer Perkins, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
Jennifer Perkins is the outgoing president of the Iowa Quilters Guild. And what Marilyn was just saying, Jennifer, that she didn't have the patience to sit and quilt. It does take a special person to be a quilter, doesn't it?
You know, there are areas of quilting for everyone, even for the people who can't sit still. There are quick methods for them. And then for those of us who like to sit still, we hand quilt and whatever. So you can find an area of quilting that will suit your personality.
Well, Jennifer, thank you so much. And Alyssa, thank you for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
Alyssa Dodge is a designer who lives in Des Moines, and she represents some of the future of quilting. You can see some of her quilts. If you go to our Facebook page, Iowa Public Radio, we've put a link up to her Facebook page for Foursquare Studios, so you can see some of the many quilts she's been working on. And Bonnie, thank you.
Okay, well, you know what? We hope everyone will come. We have more than 1,000 quilts that will be on display at the Iowa Event Center there in Des Moines. And the show runs Wednesday, October 3rd through Saturday, October 6th. And the show opens at 9 o'clock each day.
All right. Bonnie Browning, thank you very much.
Thanks.
Bonnie Browning of the American Quilting Society. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese and Emily Woodbury. Our executive producer is Jeff Schmidt. Production assistance from Caitlin Fry. Technical support from John Pemble. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Charity Nebbe.